I'm Laura Vinroot-Poole. For over 20 years, I've owned Capital, an internationally recognized specialty store in Charlotte, North Carolina. On this podcast, we unlock the stories of people's lives through the stories of what they wore. These aren't conversations about fashion. These are conversations about people.
Everybody wants to know her name.
Sarah Wren is the woman behind all of our entertaining here at Capital. From the meals we serve for supper to her mother's famous cheese straws, our cocktail party staple. I love collaborating with her because we have the same values when it comes to food. It should be uncomplicated, true to our roots, and just downright delicious. Our conversation covers everything from Sarah's beginnings in the cake business to her love of homegrown tomatoes. When did you realize that it was food that you loved more than art?
Well, they've always been sort of like six one way, you know, half a dozen the other. Growing up, it was always we were cooking and then I was drawing or like decorating cookies or whatever it was. But when I moved back to the States, I didn't have a job. I like hustled cake at the Quail Hall pool.
Wait, and tell me about the cake. How did the cake start?
I made a couple of cakes right before I left England. And I took it to a birthday party and I had one of my best friends, Pilar, who over 7 years, I never saw her eat a sweet. And she had a slice of cake and then she said, may I please have another? And I was like, man, I'm maybe onto something.
I want to roll.
Then when I moved back, I was like, I know I make this really good cake. So I'm going to start making cake until I find a job that I really want to pursue.
Had you grown up with that cake or it was sort of out of the blue cake?
No, I created the cake, really. I mean, I think that I understand how people really want to eat.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that the majority of the world need to eat or want to eat like a deep fried Snickers bar.
Ew.
You know, like, or something like, you know, fried Snickers donuts or whatever it is. Nothing against Snickers. But I saw that there was a niche in the market. There was nowhere in Charlotte for you to be able to purchase a really beautiful white on the outside cake with fresh flowers on it that wasn't, you know, didn't look like, you know, a raccoon or a princess or something. I don't know. You know, it was just a pretty cake, something that you would love to present to your friend or your mother. And then on the inside, I made them five layers and they're ombre. So they go from light to dark. Each layer is a different color.
And were you always, was the first cake you did ombre too?
I think the first cake I did was a 4th of July cake. Man, it was so ugly. It was humongous.
But it was blueberries and strawberries? Or it was
blueberries and strawberries is the decoration on the outside. Strawberries, you know, cut in half around the bottom and some sort of lame design on the top. But they have cream between the layers and they're salty.
Yeah.
Salty on the outside, so they're beautiful.
And almond, right? Are they sort of usually never almond?
No almond.
Really?
Just vanilla.
They're just so rich and delicious. I figure they were almond. In London, did you have five cake pans?
No,
how did you
gosh.
Fit that
and
in
I
your...
like had this teeny tiny little kitchen with this, you know, like a half refrigerator,
right.
Like they have there. Like
exactly.
That's normal. And I had maybe two pans and this small teeny oven. And I was like, you know, even now, if you're not organized, if you don't have your five bowls out for your five different colors, and I dye each layer separately. So you can, like, use the whole batch and, like, dye and add more dye and then pour it out when you weigh each layer. Mm. But, you know, you're not always using just dye from a bottle. You're mixing.
Yeah, paste, right?
You're
dye
mixing.
Paste.
Yeah, it's like a gel. Uh-huh. But you're not always just, like, squirt orange. It's
right.
More like let's try and make this a beautiful color, and the, you know, possibilities can be endless.
And how did it turn into a business?
Word of mouth.
Yeah,
I think
people
and I mean, they're,
people freaked out.
They're good.
They're really good. But you people were like, when the first time we had it here, people were almost crying. I mean, like, I've never seen anything like it.
And I used to carry around that, like, plastic, you know, cake carrier and would have to leave it and come back and But that's the sort of balance of the cake and the balance of what people enjoy eating, is that it has cream between the layers, so it's not all icing, and it has, so that's a little bit of light, adds a little bit of lightness to it, and it's salty and it's sweet, and then you can freeze it and like you pull it out and it's, break like one piece off, yeah, and it's got that cream in the middle. It's like ice cream cake.
It's really good frozen.
Yeah.
So you have a new business that you're working with now, working on Copain. And tell me, where did the idea come from? Tell me, what's it going to be? How's it going to change things?
It's going to bring beautiful food to Charlotte.
Thank God.
Thank God.
Because you were the only person doing it for so long. I know you need an army to help you.
You do. And I believe that, too, if you build it, they will come. And people are so okay with what everybody else serves because that's all there is. So that doesn't mean that that's what we all need to be. I think you can strive to be something better. And I think because I love art and I love an aesthetic that, and you so often eat with your eyes, like, yeah, it doesn't need to be over the top and super fancy. It just needs a beautiful package. Like, please, no more black plastic ever. Copain is like, it'll be a cafe and we'll have a bakery and you can order online some beautiful, and it's real food. It's food that you hope your neighbor would feed you when they ask you over for dinner. Nothing of too complicated, but a little bit elevated.
No. And what's your favorite thing that they're making or that they're going to make?
We do like a wood roasted salmon, and it has like marinated fennel and red onions and cucumbers. And then it comes with like a dill yogurt, and there's some mint in there too in the vegetable salad. And it's just easy, and you can eat it. You eat it cold.
Yum.
I mean, you can heat it back up if you want, but it's delicious cold. And it comes in this beautiful little wooden box, and it's just lovely. It's a gift.
Yeah, entertaining is a gift. I mean, it is so generous.
And, well, that's what the important part about being entertaining, right? To be generous of yourself.
Yeah. I do think that really is a Southern thing.
And I think that part of what we offer is something that it feels like you get put a little more effort into it. Which I also think is a big part of entertaining. To, you're having people over, you need to show them that you've put some effort into it.
Well, I always talk about that with clothes because I've, you know, somebody was saying the other day, you know, what is it about Southernness, you know, that, you know, how do we dress differently? And I said one of the biggest things I think is that you show up. You know, if you, it's not polite to show up at an event and not be turned out, you know, and not be of the occasion. You know, you don't wear a day dress to an evening thing.
Lord, no, God.
People will do it's not about money. It's not about, I mean, you could do that from the Junior League thrift shop. It's just about respect, I think, and about respect to the hostess, really.
And that's, you know, part of what we're trying to offer, too, so that it, you know, our tagline is to be able to gather with ease. So we sort of take some of those steps off your plate, and it's something that if you wanted to, you could serve our food off of the packaging that it is that you pick it up in.
Yeah, it's so funny because growing up, you know, I mean, my parents entertained all the time, or everybody entertained with each other, all, you know, that you went to somebody's house every weekend, it seemed like, and people were not intimidated to entertain like they are now. I mean, people don't have time, but two, I think they think it has to be some crazy, you know, 5-course meal, Michelin-starred meal at home. And I mean, growing up, you know, people would serve meatloaf, and it was so chic.
And I think those are the best parties to go to now, where you, as a hostess, that you share something that means something to you with your guest. And it doesn't need, anybody can, you know, money can buy a lot of things, but it doesn't buy sort of a true feeling. Can't give that to your guest. So I always say, you know, make something that means something to you, or like, oh God, well, my grandmother would have served chicken curry tonight.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm going to serve. Or I love brown rice. And use your pretty things and don't overthink it. My goodness, cut some flowers out of the yard or a branch, or find some candles, light them if they're already burned. You know, don't worry about it. And use a nice napkin.
We've done some incredible parties together. Tell me, what are some of your favorites?
The first party we did together was for Jane Scott Hodges, maybe. Uh-huh. And
who's from New Orleans?
Who's from New Orleans? And I would sort of did the whole thing by myself and my
not
mother.
Sort of, you did.
We served shrimp and corn pies from the Kudzu Bakery in Georgetown, South Carolina. And somehow I had gone through Athens, probably from Lake Greenwood, driven through Athens to pick up pickled green tomatoes from 5 and 10, which is Hugh Asherson's restaurant. I went to Georgia, and I knew that they had these pickled green tomatoes that they're really to die for. And we had sliced tomatoes as well, and mayonnaise and basil, and probably sour cream pound cake with custard, bold custard for dessert. And it was beautiful, and it was simple, and
it was almost like people had never been to a dinner party like that, where you had, like, just really delicious food.
Really delicious food.
What a novelty.
And, you know, I didn't make it all, either. I bought, you know, sometimes it's about just knowing what's good.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you aren't great at making fried chicken, like, you know, go to Price's. Or if you know somebody who makes it, ask them to make it for you. You don't have to do it all on your own.
You helped me do a luncheon the other day and with a lot of my mother's friends who are in their 70s. And I remember one of my mom's friends said, "Now, Laura, did you make the vegetable sandwiches, the tea sandwiches?" And I said, "Well, did I make them?" And she said, "Yeah, did you make the tea sandwiches?" And I said, "Well, no, ma'am, I did. I made them happen." And she said, "Well, I didn't even ask that." She said, "You shouldn't even tell me that." She said, "You made them because they're here." But I love that idea that she wasn't even trying to, like, trick me into saying that I hadn't made them. She was just like, "Oh, no, you made them because they're here."
You know, your mom did that one time to me, and I...
She did? What did she do?
Oh, your dad was, I don't know, having 10 people over or something, and I just dropped some food off. And then I picked something up or something the next day, and she said, "I just had to tell him that I made this part, that I made the crab cakes, because they were so good, and I was too embarrassed to tell him that I had it all brought in." And I was like, "You did make them. You made it happen."
Like, yeah, exactly.
I wasn't even here. I don't know what you're talking about.
I love that.
And your cat, the 20th anniversary party was also, it was amazing, really, because the food, I mean, the whole party was lovely. But the food, to me, that party was really, it was perfect. And it was laid out perfectly on this beautiful buffet. And
out on a farm.
We were out on the farm at North Corner Haven, and there were, you know, huge dough bowls, but there were also, you know, there was a pig's head on a silver platter and, you know, sterling serving utensils, again, like out of a wooden bowl, or those, like, you know, silver plate salad tongs, you know, getting salad with, you know, beautiful, like, Johnny jump ups all over the top of it. And it just fit the occasion. It was of what it was, you know, it was of the place that we were having it, but it was also elegant and of you. And that is my favorite thing about entertaining with you, is that it is about entertaining as you would if you were in your home, or if you were at your farm, or, you know, make it who you are.
Well, and I think that having, you know, 200 people from all over the world come to this event, for me, it was so important not to, you know, I didn't want it to be anything other than what we are, and to share that with people, and to share things that I think that were so exotic to them that they never had before.
I mean, people were like, what is this?
What
and we're
grits?
Like, this is a tomato pie, and it's the best tomato pie you've ever eaten in your life.
I mean, people were dying over it.
Yeah.
It was beyond. Also, Julia Reed, that was a fun dinner to do, using some of her recipes. And that was a little intimidating, though, no?
That was very intimidating. I mean, I read that book. Mom always puts vodka in the sangria.
Right. Yeah, that's such a good one.
And I have all my notes and things highlighted and little post-it notes. And before dinner that night, she signed my book that day. And she was like, "Oh, let me look at all your notes."
Oh,
and I was so embarrassed. But come to find out, she is... like, the world is a better place, and certainly more fun because Julia Reed exists.
Absolutely. She is my favorite.
I wish she was my best friend.
She is your best friend. Jules is the coolest. She's awesome.
That dinner was really fun. It was very similar, I think, to Jane Scott's dinner as well. It was intimidating, but it was fun, and everybody really sort of let loose. And again, it was fairly early on, and then before I knew it, there were like people up from the table, like out back smoking cigarettes, like with the kitchen, and you know, like eating biscuits off the tray. And,
yes,
and it was a good time. I think we did her well.
Well, and I'll tell you, the other person you did really well was Andre Leontali. I've never seen a happier human after a meal. He loves your food.
He loves my biscuits. And he says that they're just like little pillows of heaven, and he loves them.
They are. They're angel biscuits, but they are from heaven.
Well, bless him. You know, he's from Durham, and his grandmother used to make him his own pan of biscuits every Sunday. I think there's a lot of nostalgia in that, but not everyone knows how to make a proper dinner biscuit.
And people don't.
And that it is, you know, an appropriate size, and that it's not a roll, y'all. It's not a roll. It's a biscuit. You know, they're really actually not that hard to make.
I mean, I'm going to just let you keep on making them. I trust you.
Crisco and flour and whatever milk you have in the refrigerator.
I loved the, my dad's Swedish, and so growing up, his family would have a
smorgasbord
on Boxing Day, and you did that for me a couple of years ago, and I want to do it again. I thought that was really fun and different, and people loved it.
People loved it, and it was so fun. John Lupton brought in all these, you know, like Christmas tree fronds, and it was almost like you could hardly find the food on the table amongst all the greenery.
You could barely find the sill and the smoked salmon and the glug.
That was beautiful.
What's your favorite meal to cook for your friends or your family when you cook at home?
Crab cakes, collard greens, squash pickle, sliced tomatoes. I don't, you know, sometimes collard greens and sliced tomatoes don't always work, but squash pickle is like gold. And my grandmother makes it, and I can make it. My mother can make it. It's yellow squash and like thinly sliced onion.
I mean,
it's real yellow.
It has like mustard
seeds in it. I mean, I think plenty of sugar and vinegar, but they're sliced. The squash, everything's sliced really thin, and it's basically a kind of a pickle, and that with the collard greens and the crab cake it's so good. And in the summertime, maybe it's, you know, crab cakes, fresh blue crab, you know, that dad picks, spent all day picking, and with corn or succotash and sliced tomatoes and salad. And I mean, I love to cook anything.
Yeah, I do too. I think one of the reasons that we do well together, that we entertain well together, is that we're committed, I think, to similar things and have similar values, like full-fat Duke's mayonnaise.
Yes, ma'am.
Fried chicken. And hamburgers. I think like
hamburgers.
People love having hamburgers at events. They're so disarmed by it and so excited when they get there, like, oh, what a relief. That's all I wanted.
Well, I mean, I think it, especially when you have a group of people who don't all know each other, that are all sitting together. And oftentimes when we're entertaining together, it's not that people are here for an evening. It's that they're here for 2 days together or something. And so it's a great way to get people to kind of loosen up and break the ice and enjoy themselves. And I think when they're enjoying themselves, then everybody has a better time.
Specific pieces of clothing evoke emotions within people. For me, they do. Is there a dish that you make that makes you feel the same way that you get emotional about?
I'm pretty emotional about tomato pie.
Yeah. You use Duke's mayonnaise in it?
I use Duke's. Sometimes I'll use Hellman's if I'm at mom's house, because that's what she has.
Your mom's Hellman's, okay.
I mean, I love tomatoes. I mean,
tomatoes.
I would say that sliced tomatoes are actually, and that's not something you technically make, but, you know, really.
You technically make it, because you and I, we are very specific about the way we cut them.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, but we grow them at Lake Greenwood, and there's something about, which is where my grandparents are from, Greenwood, and my mother has three sisters, and we all grew up going to Lake Greenwood for the 4th of July, and all of us, and now we still all do that, and it's like 56 of us. I mean, and still growing, and we all really like each other. It's kind of amazing. But there's something about that red clay in Greenwood, South Carolina, that grows the most amazing, beautiful tomatoes. And and they're all sort of like sitting in the kitchen up, you know, kind of brown bagging.
Yeah.
And at any given time, you know, in the morning, there's people sitting at the table in the kitchen peeling tomatoes.
Yeah.
And not peeling, blanching, but peeling with a knife or peeler and onto some newspaper. And that and those tomatoes are the best thing I've ever eaten in my life.
Divine.
It doesn't really get any better. Divine. It's sort of like, you know, eating the cheese and drinking the wine in France, and it all sort of tastes the same. I mean, this is...
It tastes like terroir.
Mm-hmm.
The tomato terroir.
Yeah.
I think we both have together been asked to do, have been encouraged to do a book, like, often. Why do you think we would and should do that?
I certainly think we should.
We've done a lot of events together.
We have done a lot of events together.
I would love to have a scrapbook of what we've done, really. Because I think almost the same thing with clothes that... I was telling somebody today, she said, I feel so bad because I had this stylist from the store helped her for a couple hours. And she said, I feel like so bad that I can't do it myself. And I said, oh my God, I can't do it myself. I mean, somebody helps me get ready for events. And it's not about somebody telling you what to do. It is, like you said, it's about somebody just giving you the confidence to do it and to say, oh, okay. So like, I don't have to have turned out my house to be a 5-star restaurant. It's just about being yourself and helping, having somebody almost give you license to be yourself and to that's okay. You know, who you are is enough.
Who you are
is
enough.
We just want to be with you, you know, and the same, the way you dress and the way you eat, the way you entertain.
I mean, it would be an interesting book because I do think that it would be a cookbook of sorts, that there'd be some of our family's amazing recipes that, and really there's nothing more solid than, I feel like, what's in the cookbook at home that's, you know, held together by the by the rubber bands and with like 80 things, you know, shoved in there with little other recipes written on them. Yeah. But also to sort of give people a reference point of etiquette and also of being themselves and telling a story about all the events that we've done. And sometimes that's just what you need is that a story to kind of get you going.
Most of the things that you make and that I ask you to make, there really aren't recipes for. You know, it's kind of like you have to ask your mother to ask her aunt or sister's cousin.
A little bit of this and like kind of some of that or whatever milk's in the refrigerator. I mean, there's a lot of that.
And I feel like it's almost like my duty. I feel like I want to preserve that. I want to preserve all of those things that I grew up with that I can't, there's not a cookbook of that. There's not a reference book on that.
Certainly not one modern day. And it's all, and there's a lot of sort of Southern cookbooks out there, but I'm not sure.
But it's a little tricked out. You know, when I got married, my wedding present for my mom was a little wooden box full of my family's recipes. And it meant more to me than anything I've ever gotten, you know, from her.
I was looking and I have a recipe book for my mom.
And
I was looking in it today for squash casserole.
Well, just their handwriting on it. And actually, that was my thesis in school. I'm an art major, and I did a project on that, on women in my family in the kitchen and growing up and the things that you learned in the kitchen through your generations. And I had bunches of recipes in my grandmother's hand and with... You see like watermarks, literally like splash marks of, I don't know, vanilla, you know, milk, flour. Just the history of that is, I think, the most beautiful thing in the world to me. So what would you call the book?
I always wanted to write a book and called Who's Sitting Next to Granddaddy. Because
that was Catbird Seat.
Right. And it was usually me or I was on his left and one of my two other cousins. We're all 6 months apart. I mean, I have 10 of them, but two other girls, Harriet and Perrine, they were on his right.
You have to be ready for that seat, right? Like, you have to really have things to say that are interesting. And
you do, but, you know,
you have to know how to behave.
You certainly have to know how to behave and how to eat properly and have table manners. But you also have to know how to engage at the table. I think Granddaddy, that was really important for him. To have all of his grandchildren at the dining room table with he and grandmother, and to engage all of us and really to teach us so many things that you need to know in life, if not everything, you know, how to have you arrived at Thanksgiving or Easter or whatever it is, and you're, you know, dressed appropriately, mm-hmm. and you have, you know, learned social etiquette just amongst your family, and how to help and when to help and when not to help. Manners to me aren't so much about like you yourself, they're really about other people.
The question we ask everybody on the podcast is, what did you wear to the prom?
Well, I went to Atlanta to buy my dress.
I think it.
At Tootsie's, probably. I had two. I'll tell you about two dresses.
I was going to say, you probably went to a couple proms.
One dress I bought in at Uniquities in Chapel Hill.
Right.
And this was sort
of... Which is still there.
Which is still there. And this was sort of when, like, the Gucci cutouts were happening.
Okay, Tom Ford Gucci.
Tom Ford Gucci.
Okay, wow.
And it was lavender. I had another black dress that I wore to prom that was really pretty, and it was halter, not real low on the back, sort of A-line, and it had this netting kind of over top of it, tulle netting with some beadwork in it. It was really pretty, actually.
Do you still have them?
I do still have them.
Both of them at your mom's mm-hmm. house or your house?
At my mom's house.
Yeah.
I've worn some pretty horrible things too every once in a while.
I have too, and they're all at my mom's house too. And Fifi, we went to my mom's house the other day and went through my stuff, and she was just like, what is this? Everything you wouldn't understand. It was the 80s.
What'd you wear to the prom, Laura?
I had a couple, but the one I had, one that was kind of boring black. I mean, it was really beautiful, but black v-neck, sleeveless Joan and David, black satin, mm-hmm. with a black satin mules with a bow that were so pretty. But the one I really loved was, I had gone to London with my family, and in London, or in at Laura Ashley, in the there was the August sale, which was this very famous, you know, the one sale a year at Laura Ashley. And Laura Ashley was everything at that time.
Everything.
Yeah. So I think I got it well before I was even prom ready. I probably bought it when I was 13 at the August sale at Laura Ashley. And it was pale blue, like Carolina blue, cotton. It was like a polished cotton, maybe. And it had big sleeves and a sweetheart neckline and a big sash bow. And it was actually really pretty. And I still have it, for sure. Yeah. Thank you, Sarah. I love talking to you. What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drazda. What We Wore is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.